Greetings and welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Lori Mayer. Thank you, Ms. Mayer. You may begin.
Thank you, Manny. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to September's Town Hall Discussion. My name is Lori Mayer, and I'm the Director of the Medical Research Services for the Clinic of Central Texas, MS Clinic of Central Texas, here in Austin. And on behalf of the IOMSN, I'd like to welcome you all to join tonight's program entitled Fatigue in MS. These educational sessions are held on every third Tuesday of each month and is led by an IOMSN member, speaking on a selected topic for about 15 minutes, then will be followed by an open discussion, which we limit to about an hour. We would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Biogen IDEC for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. Thank you, Biogen IDEC. Before we begin the town hall discussion this evening, I did want to let our audience know about regional CME programs that are sponsored by the IOMSN. And these programs focus, actually they're hosted all around the country, and they focus to educate nurses in the community about MS and discuss management of this complex illness. They are co-provided by the International Organization of MS Nurses and the Nurse Practitioner Alternatives. I believe there is from, 6.5 to 6.5 CME, is awarded. One of the programs is entitled Skills Development in MS, and we're actually having this program here in Austin on Saturday. The registration for this is closed. I believe we have about 72 at last count, but they will accept walk-ins. We're also having one in Atlanta, Georgia on October 15th, Mount Laurel, New Jersey, November 19th, Oakland, California on December 10th. The second program is entitled Complex Issues in MS, and it will be presented in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on October 1st, Beechwood, Ohio, October 15th, and Denver, Colorado, October 22nd. The third program is Caring for the Patient with MS, Salt Lake City, Utah, October 1st, Memphis, Tennessee, November 5th, Indianapolis, Indiana, November 12th, Jackson, Mississippi, December 10th, and here in Houston, Texas, on December 10th. The last program I did want to mention is what is called, and this is a first of its kind, One Day Nursing Congress, and it'll be held at the Intercontinental Chicago O'Hare Airport Hotel, and this is actually in Rosemont, Illinois, December 3rd. There are scholarships that are available for any IOMSN member to help defray travel expenses. The program that they're initiating is called a Member Plus One program, and they ask that an IOMSN member bring a nursing colleague who's not currently a member and apply for a fellowship grant for both to attend the meeting. So this will really help to cover hotel travel and hotel accommodations and any extra expenses. If you'd like to get more information about this, just go right to the IOMSN website, scroll all the way down near the bottom. You'll see all the regional programs, and we'll give you all the information about registering. So let's begin our town hall discussion for this evening, Fatigue in MS, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Carrie Lynn Sammarco. She is a doctor of nursing practice and family nurse practitioner, and her role at the NYU Medical Center Hospital for Joint Diseases Multiple Sclerosis Program is the nurse practitioner for that center. Carrie provides clinical care and education to patients living with MS and their families, promoting wellness-oriented care in the community and collaborating with other healthcare professionals. She was awarded the John Distal Nursing Fellowship in MS Award, and her project focused on evaluating, defining the role of the nurse practitioner in MS centers around the country. The selected topic again tonight is fatigue in MS. Please join me in welcoming Carrie for this meeting. And Carrie, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me this evening. I'd like to thank Jen Smirka and Lori Mayer for helping to coordinate all of this, and thank the IOMSN for having me. So I'd just like to speak briefly, I'll keep it to about 15 minutes, fatigue and multiple sclerosis, and then we can open it up to some hopefully lively discussion. So let's start with what is fatigue, and not even specific to multiple sclerosis, but just fatigue in general. It's a very common complaint, even in the general population, and we're dealing with fatigue. We're looking at a subjective lack of physical and or mental energy. It's usually excessive or whole body tiredness, and this isn't relieved by sleep. So it's not where someone says, "Oh, I had a rough night and I was tired the next day and I got a good night's rest the next night." That's not what we're talking about. It can be acute, which is lasting for a month or less, or it could be a chronic issue lasting for 1 to 6 months or longer. When we look at the clinical definition of fatigue, usually we're looking at three components to this definition. And the first would be the inability to initiate activity, or this perception of generalized weakness in the absence of an objective finding. The second would be a reduced capacity to maintain activity, so we're thinking about easy fatigability here. And the third would be difficulty with concentration, memory, emotional stability, what we'd consider more of a mental fatigue. And overall, the most important thing I think that we want to recognize for our patients is how it can have truly a significant impact on quality of life. When we're talking about what fatigue is, we also want to look at what fatigue isn't. And fatigue is not the same thing as tiredness, right? Tiredness happens to everyone. It's an expected feeling after certain activities or later in the day. And we usually know why we're tired. As I mentioned early, if you have a long night, if you don't get a good night's sleep. But when you do then get a good night's sleep, it will solve that problem. Okay. When we look at multiple sclerosis-related fatigue, over 80% of patients with MS have fatigue or have had fatigue at some point. Now, as we know, it's to varying degrees. There are several different kinds of fatigue that can occur in multiple sclerosis, and one would be sleep-deprived fatigue. If someone is getting up five times a night because of bladder dysfunction, obviously that's going to impact their sleep and potentially lead to daytime fatigue. If someone has pain during the night, that can impact their sleep at night and therefore lead to fatigue during the day. Fatigue can be depression-related. Fatigue can be related to effort expenditure, right? Expending a considerable amount of effort just to accomplish daily tasks, you know, what we refer to as activities of daily living, dressing, brushing teeth, bathing, preparing meals. So, again, we can see here how there can be a tremendous impact on quality of life. When we talk about a fatigue that's specific to MS, there's a term called lassitude that we'll see. And a lot of MS clinicians will use this term when describing their patient's fatigue. Generally, when we're talking about lassitude, we're talking about a fatigue that is occurring on a daily basis. It may occur early in the morning, even after a restful night's sleep. It tends to be worse as the day progresses, and this may be ringing true and similar for those of us who work with patients with MS on a regular basis. Tends to be aggravated by heat or humidity, right? Comes on easily, suddenly, is generally more severe than what we think of as even a normal, quote-unquote, fatigue or a fatigue in the general population. And it's even more likely to interfere with daily responsibilities. So we see this magnitude with lassitude that we don't see with general fatigue. You know, unfortunately, as with many things, the etiology of fatigue is really poorly understood. The pathogenesis is not entirely known, though it does appear to be multifactorial and directly related to the underlying disease process. There have been some interesting neuroimaging studies that reveal a correlation between MS fatigue and a widespread hypometabolism, but still we don't have specific understanding of why our patients are dealing with fatigue. When we have a patient present with MS fatigue, we would then want to look at, well, how do we make this diagnosis? And, you know, rather than someone just coming in and saying, well, I'm fatigued or I'm really tired and leaving it at that, or simply implementing a plan of care at that point, we really want to look at, well, what exactly are they dealing with? And some helpful guidelines, and actually the Paralyzed Veterans Association in 1999 came up with a clinical practice guideline for fatigue and MS and evidence-based management strategies for fatigue and MS. And that's a really nice reference to have in your office. When they look at helping clinicians make a diagnosis, we're talking about the presence of fatigue symptoms for at least 50% of days for more than a six-week period. This is helpful to distinguish MS fatigue from other MS symptoms. Okay. So common features of MS fatigue, again, as I had mentioned a little earlier, reduced energy, malaise, motor weakness during sustained activities, difficulty with concentration or maintaining concentration especially. A very important part of making the diagnosis with MS fatigue is differentiating it from other issues. So part of the differential diagnosis includes looking at, is there depression? Is physical disability in and of itself leading primarily to the fatigue? Is there a thyroid disorder? Is it a side effect of medications that we've already prescribed to deal with other symptoms, like the antispasmodics, some of the immunosuppressive agents? We can also ask the patients to fill out questionnaires such as the FSS or the MFIS, the Modified Fatigue Impact Scale. And then we actually, that is a scale that is available to all of us. You can access that online, through the National MS Society in the professional section. And the five-item version is kind of a, you know, quick and dirty test to use. It's real straightforward, and it's a five-question item with a Likert scale response of 0 to 4, ranging from never to almost always. And questions that are posed to patients are, I have been less alert, I have been limited in my ability to do things away from my home, I have had trouble maintaining physical effort for long periods of time, I have been less able to complete tasks that require physical effort, and I have trouble concentrating. So instead of asking someone, are you fatigued, and assuming that their definition of fatigue is the same as ours, this helps patients to kind of identify specific areas in their activities of daily life that may be effective. Well, now, if we've established that there is MS fatigue, how do we manage this fatigue? And I think what's so important is if we're looking at a comprehensive evaluation to help identify the specific factors that are contributing to fatigue. So if we've assessed that there is an issue with fatigue, looking at our team members, whether they're on our location, on our site, or at another site, and figuring out, coming up with a game plan that hopefully involves a combination of non-pharmacologic and possibly pharmacologic medications. I think initially we really have to look at some basic culprits and basic lifestyle changes. Smoking cessation, reducing caffeine, and exercising. I mean, just some basic components that aren't specific to multiple sclerosis, but undoubtedly will kind of give us a little bit of a lead in dealing with MS fatigue effectively if we're addressing some wellness changes. When I have a patient who comes in and we're discussing fatigue as an issue, a symptom of theirs, the first colleague that I want to discuss this with or make a referral to are my colleagues in occupational therapy. I'm fortunate enough that I have a wonderful rehab team on site and occupational therapists who specifically take an interest in fatigue management and have an assessment that they will do with our patients. So we can actually make a referral to OT specifically for fatigue eval. And part of what they're doing is, again, delving into the assessment a little bit more. I mean, we all know that we have a limited amount of time with patients, and just what I'm going over already, if we attempted to do it with our patients, this is taking up a significant chunk of time to really have a sound assessment and come up with a treatment plan potentially. So if we can rely on our colleagues who can assist us, you know, by all means, let's do this if we have them available. So OT is really going to look at the patient, do a more thorough assessment, and maybe come up with tasks at home or in the workplace to help simplify issues. We can also look towards physical therapy. They can assist with learning energy conservation versus expenditure. Sleep regulation is another important management tool. Psychological interventions. You know, how are we effectively managing stress? Can we employ relaxation training? Would a patient benefit from a support group or psychotherapy? We want to recognize how heat and humidity can affect our patients, and how do we work with employing some tactics for heat management. You know, over the summer, my colleague Lisa, she showed me some really interesting devices that were in one of the magazines, and one of them specifically was cooling pad inserts for women's bras. So I thought that was a little bit of, you know, cooled you off and gave you a little bit of a lift. It was a double benefit there. But, you know, there are devices out there that can assist patients. Also, looking then at our pharmacologic interventions, like our medications. Some of the medications that have been used effectively, with modest effect or hopefully more benefit than others, but I think we're using a lot even without some great data out there. Amantadine, Simitril, Modafinil, Provigil, Adderall, so the amphetamines, Wellbutrin, which is a dopamine agonist, that's been effective in some patients. Some of the SSRIs like Prozac. I have some colleagues who have used L-carnitine. It's an amino acid. It works in the production of energy. Specifically, it can increase some activity in nerve cells in the central nervous system, we think. There's been a couple of studies, but unfortunately, with flaws, as you know, many studies have, and there can be some side effects, so interactions with antiepileptics and anticoags. Low-dose naltrexone, which most of us are familiar with in the high-dose form, treats addiction to opioids and alcohol, but in lower doses has been shown in small studies maybe to have some benefit to fatigue, depression, though ultimately one of the larger studies that Bruce Cree did that was published in the Annals of Neurology in 2010 unfortunately did not support its use for fatigue. There wasn't a benefit that was seen in the physical quality of life indicators like fatigue. But there, you know, we use many of these medications, even though Provigil has been looked at specifically in MS with some questionable findings. We may find a patient who tolerates these meds well and actually has a benefit. There's several energy conservation techniques that my OT colleagues have shared with me, and I think we can employ in practice, just prioritizing tasks, planning ahead, performing more strenuous tasks tests earlier in the day, practicing balancing activity versus energy expenditure. And I did submit my, I have some slides which have some of these techniques on there, so they should be on the IOMSN website, and I find them helpful. So in conclusion, I think, you know, the take-home message is fatigue is one of the most common symptoms in MS and can significantly impact quality of life and interfere with function for our patients. So we want to look at evaluating patients with who are reporting fatigue and inquiring if they're not, and utilizing our colleagues to comprehensively evaluate and hopefully come up with a combination therapy that is effective for patients. So with that said, I will turn the table back over to Lori and Jeff.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carrie. That was a great overview. Now, I have a question for you before I actually have Manny open up the queue with the questions. What are some of the non-pharmaceutical interventions, nursing interventions, that you've used that you've had the best success with?
Okay, so I think what is most important is part of the assessment to assess what may be a culprit along with causing the fatigue. And when we're looking at maybe trying to improve quality of sleep, I think sleep hygiene, assessment of sleep hygiene is huge, because even if we're dealing with individuals who have kind of a more classic MS fatigue, the fact of the matter is so many of us have the room to improve the quality of our sleep at night. So not to say that by improving the quality of sleep, it eradicates the MS fatigue, but looking at things like, you know, not watching television in bed, not reading in bed, using bed for sleeping or sexual activity, but not using it to work on your laptop and get all these other things done. So that whole idea of kind of training someone to have a healthy sleep environment is something that we can easily have a discussion with patients about and make a non-pharmacologic impact. But it's not just about that. You know, I don't want people to go home thinking, you know, well, it's just about the sleep hygiene. It's a combination, but I think that that's an important thing that we can, an important conversation we can have with patients right off the bat to get a good idea of how are they trying to, like, what do they think their sleep hygiene is like, and how are they trying to deal with their fatigue.
And, you know, that's an interesting term that you brought up, because that's one that I'm not familiar with, sleep hygiene assessment.
Oh, that comes from our sleep specialist. Yeah.
Okay, all right. And that you're talking about is our habits, maybe sleeping.
Yeah.
You're including watching TV, you're eating in bed, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And sleep hygiene is just looking at how are you approaching the whole care of sleep. You know, where are you sleeping? When are you sleeping? What's the environment like? You know, so we try to remove those quote-unquote dirty habits.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Manny, are there any questions in queue? We can open it up to our audience.
Certainly.